Okay, welcome everyone to the fifth season of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion's Continuing Learning Series Alumni Learn, a special project of our president, Rabbi Aaron Pankin. I am Dina Stein, Alumni Engagement Coordinator and Director of Alumni Learn. During this session and throughout the year, you can always reach alumni engagement at alumni@huc.edu. I'll share with you some technical details about this session momentarily. We at HUCJIR are excited to bring you the latest in research and learning from our fantastic faculty. This year, we are pleased to offer online opportunities for learning focused on Israel, latest thinking in our faculty's research fields, mentoring the future, best practices for fostering future Jewish leadership, and mini courses taught by our most well-known faculty. A full list of sessions, speakers, and times can be found on the Alumni Learn site at huc.edu/alumnilearn. Today, we are incredibly honored to be joined by Cantor Benji Ellen Schiller, who will speak on Latest Thinking in a Spiritual Language for Our Time, How We Express Our Religious Selves Through Communal Prayer and Music. I will introduce her momentarily, but before I do that, I would like to say a few words about the session. All those joining online for the session will be able to view any of our presenters' materials on your screen. If you are participating by phone only, then you will only have the audio, but you should have the article that I sent out yesterday. This presentation will be posted next week on both the ancillary materials page and the access recordings page for the recording of today's session. Again, huc.edu/alumnilearn. Later this week, you will receive a link for an evaluation of today's learning. Please do take a few moments to fill out this brief evaluation, as your feedback does assist us in providing future learning that meets your interests and needs. If you do wish to provide future or further comment, please email me at alumni@huc.edu. You are encouraged to ask questions to today's presenter. If you are joining the session online, please add your questions into the alumni chat box found at the bottom left of your screen. If you are participating by audio only, then you can email me your questions to alumni@huc.edu, and I will read any questions to our presenter, time permitting. If you have technical difficulties with today's session, you can write in the technical support chat box if you are online, or email desupport@huc.edu, and our team will be happy to assist you. And now, I am very pleased to welcome today's presenter. Cantor Benji Ellen Schiller is Professor of Cantorial Arts at the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in the Debbie Friedman School of Sacred Music. Her work involves training cantorial and rabbinical students to bridge the gap between performance and spiritual leadership. She serves as a cantor of Beit Am Shalom Synagogue of White Plains, New York, with her husband, Rabbi Lester Bronstein. Cantor Schiller received her bachelor's degree in theory and composition from Boston University School for the Arts and her master's degree in sacred music from Hebrew Union College. She is a nationally known composer. She is also a classical soprano soloist and has served on the faculty of the Institute for Jewish Spirituality, Rabbinic and Cantorial Programs, and the North American Jewish Choral Festival. Again, we are so excited to have you with us. And with that, I am turning this over to our presenter.
Dina, thank you so much for the introduction and for the invitation to come and present and teach today. Hello to everybody out there. I see your names on the screen. So many people I know and honored to be sharing this hour with. Thank you for tuning in. I hope this will be a fun session for you and perhaps even illuminating in some way. That's my prayer. And I dedicate, of course, this session to all of us who are in the field trying to make our tefillot ever more meaningful, more rich, more accessible, and to bring, to lift up the community in times, perhaps now is such a time where we need a lot of lifting and lifting up. So welcome again, everybody. I've asked you to look at, if you've had a moment, and if you haven't, I know the material is there, to look at an article I wrote about 25 years ago, give or take 2 or 3 years. I don't exactly remember the date. The article I affectionately call the 5 M's, the many faces of Jewish sacred music. We're going to be taking a look back and a look forward by the same means that this article deals with, that is, taking a step back, looking at our tefillot from the perspective of prayer and music and the intersection of both. Now, what do I mean by that? The article was written at a time when contentiousness had been brewing among communal leaders and congregations. The folk populist movement had taken a firm hold in the Reform movement, and not just in the Reform movement. And there was really a battle of legitimacy of Jewish music. The classicists, the traditionalists on one side, whether they called themselves that or not, and the folk populists on the other. Remember that the music of Nifty, of Ramah, had really taken hold, and many of the folks who had been the leaders in Jewish music and in Jewish ritual feared that this repertoire would take over all of the tradition. It had become so engaging for so many people. And the balance was off, and everyone was concerned. Concerned, and there was a sense of mistrust among the leaders, and really, again, a sense of feeling threatened. The dynamic, as I'm sure you know, was one where the folk popular repertoire spoke to people in a new way, at a time it resonated culturally in what was going on in the Western part of our world, that is, an informality, less of a hierarchical nature to expression, and thus the music provided an accessible welcome in for folks who didn't necessarily know the traditional tunes or the traditional text. It felt prayerful to people, relevant for them, the melodic, simpler music of the 70s, 80s, and now into the early 90s. And conversations about how to utilize this repertoire, how to make it work in a balanced kind of a service, those conversations among rabbis, cantors, music professionals were not always constructive ones. Musical choices of repertoire seemed to take on a politicized nature. Everyone was in a faction of what they believed to be the right balance of musical style. It wasn't a pretty time. I remember at the college, at Hebrew Union College, we had a kind of a symposium on sacred music, and we were very strategic about whom to invite. I don't remember much of the conference except for one moment. On the panel was one of my teachers, and I was a student here at HUC, Rob Cantor, Helene Reps. Helene was someone who had been in the establishment, a classically trained cantor, someone who chanted and sang with great artistry, and was thought to be someone who kind of represented the Reform tradition. At some point in the panel conversation, Cantor Reps said something to the following, and I paraphrase. I've had to learn to fall in love with Debbie's Misha Berach. She said, I realize that it has become an important prayer for my community. I didn't really understand its musical language, so I had to dig in, inside the text, inside the music, and find a way to make it mine. And she said, and I did that, and I came out the other side, appreciating the musical style and loving the prayer in a new way. There was silence in the room, and people were humbled that someone who represented the traditional classical camp, so to speak, was showing deference to this prayer and to this composition and to all it represented. I wrote this article as a response to what I was feeling amongst my colleagues. But larger than that, as a reminder that the function of music is to express prayer in an affected, embodied way, and that music serves the liturgical function. I wanted to give us perspective so that our discussion of prayer music didn't come from a validation of a particular musical style. Instead, that our conversation emanated from a consciousness of prayer, of the dynamic of prayer, the efficacy, and the performance of a particular moment in a service, and how it should flow, and how it should it be expressed. So we go to this article, which comes from a particularly charged atmosphere, still in the early 90s. And let's look at the musical styles and modes of worship mentioned in this article from a lens of 2017, of 5777. How have our perspectives changed? How have musical styles changed? What remains the same? A thrust of this article is that the diversity of styles of a given service can create a well-balanced tefillah, that the affect, the affective expression in the service and the musical expression should be varied in a service to afford everyone who comes to pray a variety of spiritual doorways into the prayer experience. If I am a mourner and I've come in to the tefillah, I'm not necessarily looking to clap my hands and sing joyously. I might instead be looking for moments of contemplation, of quiet. If I've come to the service to recharge my batteries and come back and return to the congregation, I want to be welcomed in. I want to sing the music that identifies me in this community. I want to feel a sense of belonging. I'm looking for joy. I'm looking for inclusion. We all enter prayer every day, every week, every moment, in a different way, in an individual way. How can we then, as the leaders of prayer, provide access to all who come searching? So our first of the M's is majesty, a call to awe, grandeur, a moment in prayer where the prayer is transported beyond him or herself. So moments of majesty can be felt in a variety of ways, and I listed some in the article. But now I want to go to today and to my Shabbat workshop where I teach the second year cantorial students the Shabbat repertoire, how to understand it, how to convey it, how to receive it, how the music relates to the text. And when I asked them to reflect upon a piece that we would put in this category of majestic, something that is stately and awesome in its expression, perhaps a choral piece, perhaps something of a more classical nature in some ways, something challenging for them. And I asked them, where can they see using this piece? Where would this setting fit in their student pulpits? And mostly what they have to say is the High Holy Days. Or a special occasion, the dedication of a new Torah, of a new synagogue building, the welcoming of a new rabbi or cantor, a special occasion. So they are relegating most of what we're calling a majestic expression to a special occasion or the High Holy Days. And I think that in many ways represents how many of us feel. Can we easily cite a moment on a Shabbat that engenders some sense of majesty? So I would like to ask you all to think about that for a moment. What do you call majestic? Is there any relevance to even talk about this aspect of prayer? And if so, where does it belong? Only on the High Holy Days? On festivals? On special occasions? Have we gone so far in the direction of informality that we have closed out the possibility of majesty on Shabbat? Does majesty always have to include a classical piece, or a choir, or a pipe organ, or an orchestra, or a cantor who sings solo in a way that can't include the kahal? What is your sense of majesty? Here are a couple of ideas I'd like to pose for a way that we today might consider reframing majesty, grandeur, awe in our music in the synagogue. And I welcome your ideas as well. But one thought I had was the majesty of the still small voice. Now I include Buber's notion of the still small voice in my section on meditation, the meditative affect, the meditative mode, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But I want to direct us toward a majestic meditation of the still small voice and see if this might resonate with you. So I am looking to a moment at the Tfilot of HUC as my first example. And a moment like today, which is Founders Day at HUC, when we cite and give recognition and honor to all the founders of the college. The president of the college, Rabbi Aaron Pankin, reads the name of all the faculty and past presidents who have passed right before the Kaddish. And the community then recites Kaddish. After this moment, to sing the Spanish-Portuguese Busse Shalom before concluding the prayer. Busse Shalom in Roma, Uyate Shalom. Whether in harmony or in unison, whether some elect to sing with the cantor, and many do, or it's just a solo. It's a quiet, reverent moment connected to the prayer of remembrance. Now for me, that was a moment of majesty. Another example of a repertoire, a piece of our repertoire that is still sung in many congregations, although it was written before this article was first written, the moment of a meditative majesty, I think of Steve Richards' Ritze. Ritze, Adonai Eloheinu, Be'amecha Yisrael. Again, not a dramatic piece, not majesty the way we might imagine a mountaintop, the proclamation of this prayer, but rather a moment of majesty that looks inward, yet soars at the same time in its musical style. What's your moment of majesty? How might you reframe it? Here's another idea I've come to think represents majesty, at least in my experience. And this is majestic meeting. Namely, moments in the service where singing together as one spiritual whole body, that is, the whole congregation as one, can create a sense of majesty when just the right ingredients come together to inspire this. It doesn't happen often. Much of the time in my congregation when we sing together, it's pretty similar to every other time. But there's a moment when we occasionally, whether we're chanting Hallel, or at the end of the Amidah, and the particular musical piece I'm thinking of is Shefa Gold's O Ziva Zimratya. Again, a quieter piece. O Ziva Zimratya. Magical, that's another M, it's a magical moment that happens when we start that particular melody and those words. There's a focus that's different. There's a listening that is enhanced. There's a harmony, there's a gentleness. There's just a kavanah that comes over the room. And then something starts to soar as we sing it the second time. I feel transported to a higher place and a deeper place. And for me, that's majesty in my community. And I see a couple of you have given some examples. How beautiful. Michael, Kol HaNeshama round in Jerusalem. Perhaps at the Kol HaNeshama Synagogue in Baca, where this verse came from. Kol HaNeshama. And if we were in a place together, all of us, where we could where we could hear the harmony and hear the round, that would be very special. Elohai Netzor, Devorah, what a great, beautiful example. Also, a more focused, quiet piece that comes from that still small voice and grows and expands. How beautiful. Kedusha. Yeah. Yeah. Olam Chesed Yibaneh. These are beautiful examples and different. Physical space. And melody and congregation. Everything seems to need to come together. I'm going to share what I wasn't planning to say, which is that it's not easy for me as a cantor to bring this mode into a regular Shabbat service on a regular basis. I think I get scared of this. And part of the reason I'm scared of this is I so want to include people at every moment that they can be included. And some of the majestic moments I can provide as a chazan would be something that I would offer as a solo. So this is an area I think we need to work on. Retranslating majesty. Reformulating a sense of how the arc of the tefillah moves and grows to a point, a peak, and what that would be. And we need to expand our sense of musical style to express this peak. One other idea I have before we move on to the next mode is not really as musical as some of the ideas you've suggested. This is the moment on Shabbos morning when the Bar Bat Mitzvah is given the Torah, and he or she turns around from the ark and walks back to the reading table facing us and chants Shema. And in our congregation, after he or she chants, we chant it back. And then, of course, Echad Hu Eloheinu. There is something about that moment, that Shema, That is majestic. And even if the child can't sing well, we are invested in hearing this new voice and supporting this presence and lifting this moment up. Shema. So we'll keep thinking about majesty, and I still welcome your thoughts, your ideas. I'm just opening up the conversation. Our next M, meditation. Contemplation. The affect of music that is reflective, that directs us inward, that brings us a little bit closer to the depth of our heart and soul. Meditation. Much of our synagogue repertoire of today occurs in this mode. I think we do this mode quite beautifully, and we're able to focus our prayer on the meditative. Whether in part it's the impact of Eastern tradition that has affected our focus in some way, the Eastern chant, the sense of meditation, of breath, or whether this is a reaction to the fact that our world out there is increasingly frenetic, busy, loud, complicated. We're really specializing in meditation. What I've noticed in looking back at this article and bringing it to this time and place is that there are new places in the liturgy that have become meditative that weren't the case 25 years ago, in no particular order. One is Hashkivenu. Hashkivenu in Reformed synagogues, where I travel, is something that is a meditative communal moment. Meditative meaning, think of your tune for Hashkivenu. Many of these melodies have been written in the past 10, 15, 20 years. This has become a meeting place and a meditative place that is experienced musically with more intention than it was when I wrote this article. When I wrote this article, were a Hashkivenu intoned in a tefillah for Shabbat, it would be usually a solo or a choral piece. It would be on the more majestic side, sometimes meditative as well. Now we are expanding Hashkivenu to allow the congregation to sing and meditate together. A prayer of protection, of peace. Another liturgical place that has kind of expanded the sense of meditation, at least from my perspective, is the Kavanah before the Amidah, Adonai Sfatai Tiftach. I'm sensing that this is just a very important place for there to be a meditative musical moment, and many compositions have been written here as well. And of course, we mentioned the Misha Berach, starting, of course, with Debbie's important contribution to the repertoire and to our liturgical consciousness, that is her Misha Berach. She wrote a hymn of healing in Hebrew and English. She was able to kind of condense and crystallize the ikar, the essence of the prayer, in language and in music. And maybe this is the quintessential meditative meeting moment for so many of us. And as you know, I'm sure you sing other settings of Misha Berach as well. Another quintessential place for meditation, of course, is after the silent prayer. And this continues to be a very special place for this kind of expression. What is your meditative moment? What are the ones that work for you? Are there places in the tefillah that call out for meditation? What's the balance for you? Another place in the liturgy in my congregation that's become more meditative than it had before was Adon Olam. We sing the Amsterdam setting very often. Adon Olam Hashem Olam. Where 25 years ago we sang Adon Olam Hashem Malach, or Adon Olam Hashem Malach. We are slowing down the pace. We are tuning down the volume to become more meditative, even at Adon Olam. Not always, but often. What are the meditative moments that are particularly evocative for you? And where might there be moments of meditation missing in your tefillah? I leave that up to you. Again, the goal is balance. So Peter, hi Peter, writes, does the need to lead, does the need lead to the competition, that is, the need of a particular expression lead to the composition, or does the composition create or identify the need? Beautiful question. Did Talman's Adonai Tzvatai Tiktach, for example, help us see the possibilities of that moment, or did Craig know that we were looking for that moment? What a great question. His composition is more arousing and really invites, as a nigun does, this unfolding of the repetition like a chant of the text. So does the chicken lead to the egg or vice versa? Very interesting question. I'm not sure of the answer. I think sometimes it can work both ways. Rachel, I find that I take smaller moments of silence more often during a service after a particularly uplifting, rich, or majestic song to just listen to the reverberation of the prayer we just prayed. Beautiful. So the silence between the moments, the transition, the denouement, if you will, before and after. Rachel, that's a beautiful concept, and that's part of the service, too. That is part of the service, too. Beautiful. Meeting, our third category. The meeting of souls, the congregational moments, the focus of prayer in the community, all voices raised and lifted and singing together. Well, we certainly have a lot of that these days, I'm happy to say. In fact, we've expanded this particular mode a great deal. Think of the instruments we now use to complement and support congregational singing. Think of the repertoire we now have for expanded congregational singing. Nigunim comes to mind. Chant. Songs that continue and repeat. In my congregation, the identifying moments of the community are these moments where we sing together. And I would venture to say it might be the same for yours. One nigun particularly comes to mind that people sing all over the place, including in my congregation on Friday night in the Kabbalat Shabbat. Yalai, lalai, yalai, yalai, lalai, yalai. We sing that to Psalm 96, Shiru L'Adonai. Kabbalat Shabbat, in its very essence, in many of our communities, is a place for lots of joyous congregational singing. Is that the case for you? The extended song, the Torah service, another place, if we jump to Shabbos morning, for lots of singing to accompany the processional of the Torah. Craig's Romemu Adonai Eloheinu. Joyous, extended singing. There's so many examples of this, so many nigunim. What are the identifying moments in your community where that particular melody just hits the spot and everybody is included and sings together? What are those moments? Are they all of similar focus and energy? Are they of different musical styles? Is all your singing together of one dynamic? Where does it come in the liturgy? When does it work well? When would you like it to work better? I think of the prayer Oseh Shalom, where Carla Bach's setting, the Nava Tehillah, Oseh Shalom Bimboma, is the newest manifestation of this. Now, all this started, at least to my mind, with the Oseh Shalom by Nurit Hirsch that came from the Hasidic Song Festival. Oseh Shalom Bimboma, that just took on such popularity in the 70s, 80s, and out of that, so many others. So Peter's question, does the need lead to the composition or the composition create the need, is interesting in this regard. This song represented our connection with Israel, our wanting to sing with Israel and sing a song and our needing to sing a song of peace. And also the singability of that tune. Oh, say shalom bin Ramah. It's also a hymn. And it just kind of gets to the core of what a melody needs to do. And so we've written many other songs like that, many other settings of Oseh Shalom. What are the quintessential meeting moments for you? Category number four, moving along, or what we call momentum. This is an interesting category for us in the Reform liturgical world. So when I wrote this, I meant for this to be those moments that punctuate the service, that keep us on the trajectory of the flow of the tefillah, not necessarily a dramatic moment, even such a meaningful moment. Chatzi Kaddish. Yitkadosh, yitkadosh, Shnei Rabbah. V'yahavta, v'yahavta. The brachot, the first three brachot of the Amidah, where we chant together. And that's the point I want to make here. As in every other category, we are singing these moments together more than we used to, and you all know that. We've added a few places. Now with Mishkan Tefillah, in many congregations we are chanting Chatimot, or Petichot, to particular prayers, which we have not done in the past. In many congregations on Shabbat morning, or weekday morning, we're chanting the Birchot HaShachar, the Nisim B'chol Yom, chant that is sung together to move the service along. Where does this work well in your community, in your minhag? Where would you like to expand this? Where does this work less well? What frustrates you about this particular category? Would you like more of it? Moving along. So I'm not going to spend any time on memory per se, but that was one of the categories. Memory is an overarching category, and it's the phenomenon of a particular musical prayer linking us to a visceral memory of a particular moment or time in a community or in our lives. So one of the reasons memory plays such a big part of our music is because of our sense of coming to synagogue to want to return, to come home, to re-engage in what has been meaningful for us. And sometimes that's something that is a precious oldie for us in our lives. Michael, you ask about visual tefillah. You know, projecting words makes an impact on participation. Has anyone projected the sheet music? That's an interesting question. To enable people to sing along, to teach a new melody, do you ever use written music, either on a daf or on a projector? How do people feel about that? Does that take one's attention away from the prayer, or does that enhance the access of the music, like having a hymn book where people who can read music can follow along? Many of us are stuck in the same repertoire because it's not so easy to teach new music. That's another question. Great question. How do you bring new music in to enhance a particular mode of your tefillah? How much do you feel would be appropriate to introduce as new in the course of a service? How do you introduce music? Great question. Lisa, I find less cantor-to-person communication through eye contact. Everyone is looking over my left shoulder rather than meeting my eyes. Tricky. Ah, you're talking about if you're looking at a projection, that we're not connected together with visual tefillah. So I have an issue with that as well. I have not had as much experience, but thank you, Lisa. Yeah, this is hard, you know. There are, is it a distraction to be looking at a screen? Or is it something that can unify the congregation and bring us together? Really interesting question. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I want to bring us to the question I want to ask to kind of bring some of this together. My question to you is, what is your balance of modes of music in your congregation? Where do you struggle in giving a well-rounded array of musical styles? Where do you want to grow in this area? I mentioned an area that's a little bit frustrating to me, and that is I'm looking for moments of transcendence, of majesty on a Shabbat, and it's not always so easy to get there. And I don't know where to go to find it. That's one that I would love to talk about more. What are the issues for balance for you? Are there particular aspects of your prayer service that feel missing, particular kinds of expression that don't feel right? What are the modes that are authentic to you, and are you stuck in those modes a little too much? We're probably all feeling stuck in certain ways. How might you think about getting unstuck? Now, this is not about taking anything away. This is not about making change just for the sake of change. In fact, it's important to say that just as leaders, just when the service gets a little bit less than stimulating for us, is the congregation starting to learn it and have access. We're not always going to be challenged in the tefillah, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking about balance. I'm asking about how we are fulfilling the needs of our community. Are we helping them connect to prayer, connect to God? How can we do a better job?
how can we make meaning?
So a question I'll leave you with is to share with us either a struggle or a success in some particular area of musical prayer. It can be the smallest little moment that was a success, or a real overarching frustration. But I'd love to hear where you're learning, yearning, and where you'd like to take this. And what are the M's, and it doesn't have to begin with M, particularly speaks to you as a place where you want to direct yourself further. Are there any more M's to add to this list that might not start with the letter M? One way to think about this is to think of the arc and shape of the tefillah. Where are the high points? Where are the energy release moments? Where are the times of rest and pause? When does the drama build? When does it subside? When is it best to move forward? How? Different moments call for different expression. What's something that's been a challenge for you or a success for you, where the prayer was enhanced, where the sense of majesty was embodied? Meditation, meeting. Does the choir have any part of this? Mystery. That's a beautiful M, Liz. I love that. I like to keep some choices to myself, she writes. Mystery. I like to keep some choices to myself so I can control the direction or mood at the moment. Yes. Isn't that part of our role as a leader? It's not about control. It's really about listening and being so present in the moment that you can, in the driver's seat, help steer us. In a way. Beautiful idea. And it's mysterious. It has to be spontaneous. And it also needs to be done with great sensitivity. Julie writes, I really love both classical reform music and contemporary music. I find it more difficult to go into classical, to use classical in a more contemporary service, to incorporate the classical music in a contemporary service. Thank you. Yes. Could not agree more. I bet you others are nodding their heads. How do we use some of the classical expressions in a contemporary service? Anybody have some thoughts on this? How do we incorporate that? To me, that Spanish-Portuguese "Say Shalom" is one beautiful way. That's one idea. Another is, for me, Julie, to think about those moments of majesty that are already inherent in the arc of my service. Kedusha was mentioned by Rachel earlier. And when I have a moment that there's an expectation or there's a flow that leads to something majestic, there are ways that I might consider bringing in a classical piece to suit that moment. What's harder is taking something like Zishamru, let's say, which in my congregation is something where everyone is expecting to sing together. Yismahu, sing together. Shalom Rav, sing together. Those moments would be harder. But in a moment where there's an expectation of maybe a different kind of expression, that's a place you might start. The other thing to think about is to look at this classical piece you'd love to bring in and think about ways that the accompaniment or dynamics of way or ways of rendering it can be most appropriate. That is, maybe you soften the way the accompaniment is, or maybe you won't use a choir. I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just saying, you know, ha-folk-fa-va-ha-folk-fa. Think of a particular piece that you love, a classical piece, how you might rearrange it in a way where it can be more matim or more accessible, at least the first couple of times you use it. Not to dumb it down, but rather to make the affect really something that people can relate to, even if it's different. Rachel, the place I want to work on is strengthening the connective tissue that links one prayer to the next during Shema Uvirchotecha. The Chatimot, coordinating them well among myself, my music director, and musicians, and congregation, so we can move well together. So how does one do that? Great question. Yes, how can you bring the musicians into this? Can you talk together about the flow you want to engender that combines speech and chant and song and put it together like in a musical potpourri of styles? You know, you'll have to think, Rachel, about the flow. And you have to really be talking liturgy to the music director and musicians and play with it. And it's a process over time. Also, teaching it to the congregation starts simple. But think about how the reading, if you're reading, let's say, Ma'ariv Aravim, if that's your minhag, how do you then flow into chant? Not easy. If you're reading in English, it flows on the left side of the page right in. Yeah, that's a great question to ask, and a challenge for a lot of people, how to change the routine to bring in the Chatima or the Peticha. Great, great question. One experience I've had that's worked very, very well, Rachel, is that I think of those Chatimot that I want everybody to be able to pronounce together and speak together as like in Ma'ariv Aravim. And then I think of a simple way to use it without a lot of decoration. Baruch atah Adonai, Ma'ariv Aravim. If I can teach the basic architecture of the Nusach for this Chatimot and find a way to present it, and then the next week and the next week, do it the same way, and in the way I'm singing, with how I modulate the volume to bring people in. This is the way I've been able to include Chatimot in the service. People know it's coming. Over time, I'll make it a little more complex. But I have less experience involving a music director. But my experience is, and I'll repeat it, is to work with them and talk about the goals, talk about the goal of the flow of the tefillah, talk about the goal of empowering the kahal to voice these words and chant these words together, talk about the pacing, and start small. But the prayer book allows us to play with this in a wonderful way. Any last questions, thoughts? Ideas about the mystery, to use Liz's word, of all of this in music, a way you might strengthen your tefillah, as Rachel talks about strengthening the connective tissue. That's a great expression for the moving along. But any other thoughts that this entire conversation brings out to you? I'll give you a minute to think. I'm going to read for us the very last paragraph of the article and see if it speaks to us today. Today our people call out to be included. They ask us to enrich their sense of meeting. Whether they know it or not, they don't wish to abandon either the majestic or the meditative moods of prayer. Ultimately, these four moods succeed when they complement and balance one another. When a part of the whole is not fulfilling our communal needs, however, we must examine the effectiveness of that part and its relationship to the whole. Do we offer an array of paths to God which all can appreciate? Does our music express the affective modes of our sacred text? If we assess our meeting moments, both at specific times and within the entire service, perhaps we can determine how our music can encourage a sense of welcome and empowerment, even amidst a fully balanced range of moods and styles. Let us make a correlation then between our prayers and their most vivid musical expression. Let us do this as individuals and then with our community. Our hope is that our prayers will continue to uncover the majesty within the godly world around us and the intimacy of our sacred relationship with the divine. I pray that we meet each other, both in honest debate and in the prayers we sing. So what I'd add to that would be to trust the courage of, to trust your convictions about your sense of balance of the service. Take time to think through how the flow of the service works best. And take a moment that doesn't work so well. And don't just go to repertoire. First, you might ask, what's the mode, what's the feel in this particular moment? What's coming before it? What comes after it? What would be most meaningful to achieve? And from that place, from that perspective of how to best serve the prayer and to serve the community, and also that you have these conversations with your musical folks with whom you work. Doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or not, whether they know Hebrew or not. They all have an appreciation of prayer, or they wouldn't be there. Talk to them about the five M's. Ask them their opinion of the flow of the tefillah and share with them honestly, be as transparent as possible about what the flow is that you want to engender and how you want to perhaps make change. A little bit at a time. Change is possible. Renewal is possible. As much as we feel entrenched in the same old, same old, I hope and pray that these five M's, and even perhaps this conversation, helps you think of ways to step back from the tefillah and look at it more holistically, look at it more through the lens of the affect of prayer. And think about creating that balanced diet of different kinds of expression. And I hope we get a chance to talk further of some of the nitty-gritty aspects of this work together. Thank you so much.
Cantor Schiller, thank you. This was an incredible session. I appreciate you creating the space that allowed us to really be able to delve into these questions and to be able to take the step back and the reminder to take the step back. So thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to be with us and thank you for learning with us.
Thank you, Dina. Appreciate it so much.
And to our alumni, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. This session will be, it has been recorded and it will be archived on the Alumni Learn site. Again, huc.edu/alumnilearn. Please do fill out the evaluation when you receive that. I would love to hear your thoughts on today's session and the ways that we can help and further your learning into the next semester and beyond. And with that, I am closing today's session. Again, thank you all for joining us. Cantor Benji and Ellen Schiller, thank you so much. This was incredible.
Thank you, everybody. Be well.
Bye-bye.